Hey everybody, I'm Jamin, and this is our series on React Native Radio that we call Real Life React Native. This is a series where we interview software developers who work on real life React Native apps. These are supposed to be quick and more rapid fire and fun, so let's just get started. I'm sitting down today with Benji Lightstone. Benji is a senior software engineer at Spatial. He lives in the Toronto area in Canada, and he told me that he started his career in corporate sales and decided at one point to try software development and apparently really loves it. So that's pretty cool. Now, Spatial is a very interesting app. I can't wait to get into this. Thanks for coming on, Benji. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jamin. Listened to a couple of your episodes and just excited to be here.
Yeah, fantastic. I always love these series because we actually get to talk to people who are not just theoretically, you know, building something on the side or whatever. They're actually shipping to real users, and I can't wait to hear about this. So let's get into this. What is the elevator pitch for Spatial?
So there's two elevator pitches for Spatial, one for players and one for game developers. So the one for players is you can come and play some of the most beautiful games on any device that you have for free that are published on Spatial. So if you have a computer, or if you have a mobile phone, or if you have VR, doesn't matter what device, you can come play and they're all free. And then for developers, the pitch is you can build within Unity. So Unity is one of the most common game engines. So if you already build within Unity, you can easily publish games on Spatial, and you can actually build on top of a lot of things that we provide you. So we provide avatars from a company called Ready Player Me. They're pretty big in that space. You get multiplayer, you get in-game like text chat and voice chat. You can sell items, and you can actually use C# scripting as well. So it's a pretty powerful way to be able to publish games. And think about it like Expo helps simplify React Native for you in a way. You can think about Spatial a little bit like that. And it obviously helps you reach an audience.
That's a great pitch. Yeah, I love the kind of analog to Expo, because it's really like building on top of a core technology and adding a bunch of features that just make, you know, the developers' lives easier. Things that they're going to need anyway, right? They're going to need all this stuff anyway. What parts of Spatial are in React Native?
So our mobile app is written in React Native. And the way that it works is we have a Unity app that is shared across all three platforms, mobile, web, and VR. And then each of those clients actually uses a React layer on top of it, because building Unity UI can get quite tedious.
Yeah.
So let's say you come to the Spatial app, and you start browsing around, you know, you like log in, make an account, or you start browsing for games. Like, all of that is built in React Native. And then once you jump into a game, the actual 3D world that you see is all in Unity. But a lot of the few buttons you'll see overlaid on top of it, like, you know, bringing up the in-game chat, for example, editing your avatar, that stuff's built in React Native. Mm. And if you're a React Native engineer, you're like, you'll be able to tell what is what.
If I'm getting this right, you have, this is essentially like a brownfield situation where you have like Unity section of the app, you have a React Native section of the app where you're mounting React Native and using it where appropriate. And then you're communicating back and forth somehow between these different layers.
Yeah, so there's an open source package called React Native Unity View. So the way it works is React Native actually creates the Unity player, like instantiates it. And there's React Native Unity View. The NPM package has a message handler. So think about like similar to the old React Native bridge, where it will like serialize JSON messages, send it to Unity, and it's bi-directional as well. That's how it works. And then there's some native plumbing there to like make sure that they talk to each other properly.
That is fascinating. I love that. I didn't even know that React Native Unity View existed. That's a really cool thing. what about the rest of your architectural stack? Like, what all do you have, especially on the React Native side of things?
Yeah, so for React Native, we use, so we're on version 0.71.
Okay.
Point like 1.4, but I think that may, so just for some, as for some context for all the like React Native devs, so you can think about what we might be able to use. So we're still using Flipper for debugging, which is amazing when it works.
It's amazing when it works. I love it.
Like all the plugins you can have on it are fantastic, but yeah, it's when it doesn't work, it's not great. We use React Query heavily. We use context for state management. We use sagas. Try to avoid use effect as much as we can and do things within our sagas. We use React Navigation in some parts of the app. However, it's not exactly designed for what we need to do when you're actually trying to play a game.
Mm-hmm.
Those are like the major things. And React Query has been like fantastic because we can once we write a feature on web, then you're like, you're already like have a huge head start. Just consume that, the query hooks you've made and start building UI.
That totally makes sense. Are you using TypeScript or Flow?
Yes, we're using TypeScript. Yeah. It's such a given to me that I forget about it. Yes, we're definitely we're definitely using TypeScript.
Some listeners are going to be like, why did Jamin mention Flow? But some people do.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
This one I'm really interested in because your setup feels, you know, not an ordinary setup. How do you handle testing? Do you have automated tests? Like, what level do you go with automated tests?
We have a QA team.
I love
so,
it.
So no, we don't really do, we don't do a whole lot of automated testing. We've explored setting up like Detox or something else for end-to-end testing, but because we're a startup and we're moving so quickly, it's just not something that we focused on too much. We a little bit of unit testing, but that's about it. And I think also like for us, it at some point it would be good to add tests, but we might ship a feature and we're like testing and experimenting. Is this something that users want to use? And at that point, like it might not be worth writing the tests.
Yeah, that's a good point. It doesn't sound like you necessarily regret it. It's more like it's a trade-off decision.
Yeah, it's a trade-off. There, look, there are probably times when testing would help for some of our key things, but yeah, it's always a balance of time.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. What about performance? Because obviously the Unity side needs to have a really high performance, but you also need to make sure the React Native side isn't slowing things down.
Yeah, so we especially need to make sure that React Native isn't slowing anything down because Unity is like, by nature, like, you know, requires a lot of resources.
It's going to gobble everything up. Yeah.
As it should. It's doing a lot of like, you know,
that's right.
And if you see some of the like the games that with the graphics that you can get on Spatial, like running that on, especially what we test on iPhone 8s, it's like, it's pretty fantastic. We've been able to get that to work.
You go way back.
Yeah, there. We do. I mean, it's, of course, you'll have a much better experience on like a newer iPhone. But yeah, I spent about 3 to 5 months focusing on performance with another really talented engineer named Jason. And we focused on, so memory, we're getting a lot of out of memory crashes. And a lot of that was coming. There was a lot of work we needed to do within Unity, but there was actually a lot of work we had to do within React Native as well. So I don't know if you guys have used, if you use React Native Video much.
Yeah, we have a little bit. Yeah.
It's using it's using ExoPlayer for Android under the hood, which is, I mean, I've gotten to know it a little bit, but one of them, like this guy, Rock, one of my coworkers, Rock, who's a fantastic Android engineer, not the biggest fan of ExoPlayer. When I mentioned to him this was causing some problems, he was like, oh no.
Mm.
Yeah, like there we were able to save about 300 megabytes of memory just from video.
Wow.
Because it ExoPlayer does some weird things where if you want to loop a video, it has a 50-second buffer by default, React Native Video. And we had 4 to 12 second videos playing on loop. It actually fills up the entire 50-second buffer with the video repeated. And these are on a...
Are you serious?
Yeah, it does.
So you loop it and it's going to save like 10 copies of it.
Yeah, that's... I mean, that's what I found from some posts on... Wow. Some Stack Overflow posts online. And I mean, I didn't inspect the actual like memory allocation.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I did, you know, when I did reduce the buffer size to 12 seconds, like I saw a 300 megabyte savings when I like running like a memory test to measure it.
I'll say this is a good moment to point out to React Native developers that often, you know, we're quibbling over, you know, should you do this JavaScript, you know, use a map or an array or an object or something like that. But often the biggest wins are in things like you said, like video buffers and stuff like that. Like that's where the most memory is going to be gobbled up. You really need to be measuring these things and actually seeing where's the low hanging fruit, rather than trying to chase down a few kilobytes here and there.
Yeah, I agree. I think like, it's always good to have big O notation in mind, but I think if big O notation, if you know, you writing something as N squared on the front end is having a big performance problem, you probably have too much data and you need to do something like paginate or something, right? Like the bottleneck right. is like before that point.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
And then, yeah, I can talk a little bit more about some of the other performance optimizations we've had to do. Because we also had, have you seen Silicon Valley, the TV show?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have.
Remember when the phones were heating up and burning everybody?
Yes.
That's obviously a hyperbole. And we've never had like a phone actually hurt someone, but devices can get quite hot. So we also had to like actually reduce the thermal state of our devices because we're trying to do a lot on a phone. And React Native was like contributing to that as well, just because, you know, you write some code, ship it quickly. You don't think about how often maybe like an on scroll gets called when you scrolling a flat list. And then next thing you know, like every 60 milliseconds, you're putting something on the queue and that's just like causing the phone to overheat.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I had a discussion online on Twitter the other day. It was actually with the lead of the Hermes team and some other folks. And the question was around, do you go like performance first or do you do performance afterward? You know, do kind of like a performance pass? Of course, Tsvetan, the Hermes guy, he really he thinks about performance all the time because that's, you know, really, really important to him. And I don't disagree. I think that's important to have in mind. I tend to be a little more balanced. I tend to be like, I can't help but think about performance as I'm developing. But then I do think there is a moment where you can go back and do, you know, instrumentation and measurement and really kind of identify where the bottlenecks are and then dig into how you can optimize those points as well. So I'm kind of a hybrid approach, like always be thinking about it, but also have performance passes as well.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's because if you're just thinking about performance while you're doing your initial implementation, doesn't take that much more effort and it might save you a lot of headache down the line. And I think to really think about it easily, you need to have done some performance optimization. Because once I went and spent 3 months doing this, now like it's very easy to think about when I write code or review a PR.
That is a fantastic point. Like once you've done those deep dives, then it embeds it in your brain more for future stuff. I know that that's the case for me because I was helping my brother who is doing some game development in Godot, and he was writing some very naive code. he's younger than me, more, you know, less experienced. And I was like, you know, you're going to run into a problem later with performance on this. And I know he's just trying to get it working, but like, you know, it's just something that I can't turn off. How have you dealt with cross-platform differences? You mentioned about, you know, Android having a certain like native library that wasn't maybe quite as optimized or set up for success for Android. Other than that, like what other cross-platform differences have you run into?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've run into a couple. Two of them were on. So, I mean, there's one that everyone's probably familiar with, like Safe Area View only working on iOS. Mm-hmm. So that's like a bit more challenging on Android. There's two that are a bit more specific to our app that I've run into. So one is, and I could be wrong and they may have updated it, or I may just not have understood how it works properly, but we run our Android app in full screen And the use window dimension hook from React Native doesn't actually account for where the Android navigation bar would be. So if you when I try to get the height of the not the screen, but the window, because I always do window height because I want to make sure if you want to multitask, then that works properly. So I actually noticed that a lot of our modals, for example, the overlays, which were using the window height, were had a like a bar that didn't have an overlay at the top or the bottom. So that's one that I ran into. And then a second one was a very gnarly bug. We were implementing in-app purchases so that, you know, developers could sell things in like an item shop. So it worked great on iOS and we had it working on Android. But we noticed that when you like a modal would pop up to say like, hey, do you want to buy this? You click confirm, brings up the Google Pay sheet, which is even though the app is in view, it's actually from the Android lifecycle perspective, it's backgrounding it because now the payment sheet is focused. And then when we came back afterwards, the app was frozen. It wasn't working.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So our, you know, it's like, all right, me and a couple other people are working on it. And our VP of engineering, Mike, noticed that usually we couldn't figure, we didn't know what was happening. You press the button on the modal to say like, okay, confirm, and it doesn't do anything. Our avatars usually sway a little bit back and forth. And our VP of engineering, Mike, noticed that the avatar's not swaying. So he's like, okay, I think the Unity is paused and it's like something's happening where Unity is not actually active right now. And the modal, so we have two separate pieces of like state repositories, essentially. We have our React Native context, and then we also have state that lives inside Unity, which gets synced into the React Native context. This modal was actually being controlled by Unity. So because Unity was paused, when you tried to dismiss it, it was the visible was not changing, the visible flag.
Oh, wow.
And this was something, a time where I had to like go learn more about the Android, like the Android lifecycle, because yeah. I wasn't too familiar with it. And
sure.
Essentially what happens is when you open a modal in React Native, that's a different activity. So that activity is focused, which is totally fine unless you leave the app and come back to it. Then it doesn't refocus the main activity that everyone's probably used to seeing in their React Native Android code. It keeps the focus on the modal, and therefore Unity needs to call unpause when you come back to the app.
Yeah.
Basically, I exposed a method that allowed us to like unpause it manually. You came back, anytime that like the React Native code saw that it was foregrounded, then we can.
Oh, I see.
We can basically use that event listener from React Native.
So React Native was able to kind of just watch what was happening and then say, "Hey, wake up, we're good." You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Wow. That would be a weird bug to deal with. And this is sort of like what happens when you're dealing with different renderers and different engines kind of working together. And that will actually bring up, I think, a really important question, my last question to you, which is, you know, looking at what you've built and kind of how this all orchestrates together and everything, do you think that this architecture using React Native and Unity together to kind of combine into this, and as well as, you know, the host platform, so iOS and Android, do you feel like that kind of hybrid marrying together of technologies was the right technical choice? And would you do it again?
That's a good, really good question. I didn't work here when the app was conceived. I've spoken to people at Spatial about why we made those decisions. And of course, take it with a grain of salt because I haven't done it the other way. But yeah. I think so. I think this would be the right approach based on just the information I have now. Because our web devs, like someone who knows React, can easily work on the app. We can reuse like the whole networking layer from mobile, from web. And the one thing I might change is like exploring Expo to deal with all the like build issues. That's, I think, like the biggest problem that we run into. So yeah. That's one thing that I would want to explore.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Thanks so much, Benji. This has been fantastic. I really appreciate you sharing all of your knowledge. I know that people are going to have more questions. You know, things will come up. They're going to be really curious about this. Of course, the app's name is Spatial. I was able to find it very easily. Obviously, I was playing a game actually while we were prepping. It was super fun. Where can people find you online if they want to get in touch?
I think the easiest way to find me would be on LinkedIn. So if you just search for Benji Lightstone or Benji at Spatial, you'll find me on LinkedIn and pretty responsive there.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining us and helping us with our new real life React Native series.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jamin. It was great to tell Spatial's story.
If you'd like to be on this new series and talk about your experience using React Native in the real world, email us at rnradio@infinite.red and introduce yourself and your app. This episode was sponsored by Infinite Red, my company, which is a React Native consulting company. Get in touch if you need help with your React Native app. We will see you all next time.
As always, thanks to our production team with editor Todd Wirth, our assistant editor, this guy, Jed Bartoski, our director of marketing and episode release coordinator, Justin Husky, and our guest coordinator, Derek Greenberg. Our producer and host is Jamin Holmgren, and executive producers and hosts are Robin Hines and Mazen Chami. Thanks to our sponsor, Infinite Red. Check us out at infinite.red/react-native. A special thanks to all of you listening today. Make sure to subscribe to React Native Radio wherever you get your podcasts, and leave us a review. We'd love to hear what you think.